Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new day all-purpose cleaner cleans and kills 99.9% of viruses and bacteria on hard, non-porous surfaces around your home with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Ha! Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go, got to catch my sugar. My plantain sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar. Ah, plantain, 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 plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Fuck Jason Tindall edition. today we've got a very special guest. Wish he was on more often, but we've got Elliot back today. Elliot, want to tell the people how?
Hey, how's it going? Nice to be back, especially after that today. Yeah. In fact, it's been a great day of sport. I also support the Scotland rugby team, so that was good. Fuck England.
Fuck the what is.
And I want to give a special shout out to all Nigerian Manchester United supporters, especially those that were, giving Iwobi shit last week. I hope you've had a really blessed weekend.
And yeah, the usual gang, Dean and Gabby is here, guys. I want you guys to say hello and shit. Would you just want to swear at Jason Tindall a little bit first?
Listen, I'll just say it's been, like he said, it's been a lovely day of sport today.
Pretty much. I have nothing clever to say. Let's just get to it. I'm excited. It was spiteful.
Okay, all right, cool. Because these guys are obviously pussies. So yeah, fuck Jason Tindall. Fuck his eyebrows. Fuck his fake veneers. Fuck his jacket that he's wearing. Fuck his trainers, fuck the way he stands, fuck the way he pouts, fuck the way he gets upset, fuck the way he's happy. Am I missing anything, guys?
His hair, yeah.
Yeah, fuck his hair. Yeah, so there's that. So we're recording really, really late today, guys. I was at the game, and it was cold, but yeah, I doubled up, luckily. But yeah, the vibe and the mood in general, even leading up to the game, like, you know, people on the train, like, obviously I wear a pin whenever I go to the games on my hat. And so I noticed, and they were off to a 30th birthday party and they're really upset that they weren't going to the game. I think that's rubbish because you can turn 30 next year, you know, it's fine. You know what I mean? It's not like we play Newcastle every year, you know, but it is what it is. But yeah, how are you guys feeling going to the game? Going into the game in general, because one of my mates was like, he feels like this is a banana skin.
I definitely felt like this is a banana skin, but like the one thing that I wanted us to show this season was that like we can bounce back after we lost, because the last few seasons we tend to lose in bunches, and we've shown that time and time again this season. Well, other than December, but we won't talk about that. So yeah, I thought that was a potential banana skin, but I was like, you know what, I'm going to just trust this team because they've been vibing recently. We're not going to talk about Porto. That's okay. We got this. It's fine.
Ella, how are you feeling? You know, I know it was a great day.
I felt the same. Like, there was some guy in a group chat, and this guy who supports Liverpool was like, if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be really worried about tonight. But I think if you've seen any of Newcastle recently, they just can't defend at all. And I knew that the players would be really pissed off from what happened in the home tie for the tie up at Newcastle. So, the nice thing about this team is that they seem to have that
bit of also
thing about them. Yeah, they just want like vengeance on people who piss them off, which is a really good characteristic for any football team.
And you know who that comes from directly? It comes from our dictator. You know, wouldn't you agree, Dean? Like, generally, don't you think you can feel Arteta's like in Japanese they call it Setsu no Hado, which means like evil intent or murderous intent.
What he's saying is, when he loses a duel, he gets upset.
Like, generally, you can just chalk it off to him being 5'8". I mean, like, when a man is 5'8", you know, there's a lot of anger within. There's a reason why Napoleon...
He's bigger than that, isn't he?
Sure, isn't he? For the purposes of my insults, he's 5'8". He's actually 5'10". But still, you know, he's a little dictator. And I don't know, he just has a personality that you see on the field with the players, you know, like, especially in Martin Odegaard.
Yeah.
But, Elliot, I wanted to ask you, this whole Jorginho in big games thing, do you think this was the original plan for most of the games, given that someone that probably we're happy not to be watching too often for other reasons is injured? Do you think that was the plan for most games this season and we just have to save it because Jorginho is not that fit?
Yeah, maybe. We should start with the Jorginho section, I think, because he was unbelievable. No. I don't know what it was like in the stadium, like how obvious it was, but yeah. I mean, the other thing about it was that I did watch the United game earlier.
See?
And in my head, I know they play different roles, but like Fernandes and Jorginho, if you just contrast the way they pass, it's just so unbelievable. It's like a lesson. Like you could show that to like a young player who wants to play midfield and be like, do this, do not do this.
Yeah.
Because obviously Bruno just pings pass to try and get an assist every time he gets the ball. And what we saw from Jorginho, I mean, just he wasn't actually doing this so much for Chelsea, but the range of passing and the surprise that he would put, you know, he'd play like four controlling passes and then
bang,
pick out a runner. And that's that. I think anybody who knows football really knows that is what kills you. Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, he was cramping up at the end. That it's a shame that he's not as fit as he might be. I wish we got Jorginho like way earlier in his career. I always loved the guy. I just think he's class. I think it's very funny that Chelsea sold him to us for whatever it is that he did.
Blinder.
I think we've all made a joke about we need to give West Ham another 100 million kind of thing, but we need to break some of that off for Chelsea as well, I think, because seriously...
They'll spend it well.
Yeah, 4 million for Jorginho is... I wouldn't even call it a bargain. Like, we just pulled their pants down completely, because you look at Chelsea's midfield now, like, what he could do for them right now in that midfield is unbelievable. And what he's doing for us, like, is unbelievable.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to play every game. But every time Jorginho has played in the last year, apart from the Tottenham mistake, which can happen, you know, playing the way he does, he has not put a foot wrong. And it's you know, you made a really good point, actually, about, you know, playing those four or five passes and then bang, you know, trying to kill the team. But it's who he's passing to. Jorginho, pretty much every time he passed it forward, he wasn't looking for a Ben White or a Kiwior kind of thing. He was looking for the killers. He was looking for Martinelli. He was looking for Saka. He was looking for the guys that are going to kill the team, basically, every single time. And, you know, that's how the second goal came about. But I suppose, you know, speaking about, you know, a translation of what Arteta is kind of thing, I feel like it's translated to the fans as well. I mean, you look at the build-up to the game. I think the Liverpool game, the first game this calendar year, where we've had like the build-up of, oh yeah, bring the noise, or blah, across Instagram, across Twitter, and all those kind of things. And I generally do think that comes directly from Arteta. I think he's so in tune with it all that I think he's really trying to really make sure that people that are on social media are for a part of it, people that go to the stadium for a part of it kind of thing. Like, people that rocked up to the stadium today, like, they all pretty much, I was looking at Mikel Arteta in the stands, because everybody was vexed. Everybody was pissed off to the nth degree. Like, straight after the Angel finished, it's a rubbish song, by the way, guys, sorry, but it is.
that is Arteta's idea, by the way.
I'm sorry, Mickey, but I think it's so shit, man. Like, but as soon as that finished, that like, people were foaming at their mouth. They were ready to go. And we literally, I think within the first 15 seconds, we won a corner. I was just like, oh, okay. Everybody's up for it. Like, it was, and put it like this, the team itself, I felt as if everybody, it was almost like there was a everybody was in sync. I don't know if that came up. I think Gabby, you told me the timeline that you feel like the team needs to calm down as well, because it felt like we were rushing things a little bit. It felt like we were so charged up, we were so angry because of what happened, not only in Porto, but obviously what happened early in the season with Newcastle. And the team was so aggressive that while Newcastle couldn't get out, we were making decent passes, but they weren't clicking. It felt very, very forced. And all of a sudden, I don't know if that caught me if I'm waffling, but you know, well, I felt like it wasn't clicking at first. But you know, we got the goal, and then bang, it all came together.
I'll take the set piece merchants any day. Yeah. All right, give me that first goal and let's go. Because we are going to run it up every time after that first goal.
It's become fairly popular for analysts to describe Arsenal's set piece prowess as our version of a striker. And I would like to claim credit for that. I feel like I'm the first motherfucker to say that shit. But maybe I wasn't. I don't know. I don't listen to every podcast. In any event, the second goal, I think that essentially that's become, it's the greatest example of the fluidity that we've introduced to our front line in the last, I want to say, not quite since Brighton, but that's kind of where it clicked for me as a fan. Like watching the games, that's where it clicked for me, even though we had a losing streak after that.
Yeah.
But that's where it sort of clicked for me. Elliot, what do you make of this? Do you think this is what's going to get us, you know, that consistent attacking form that we need to see the season out?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I think Saka and Martinelli were both sort of popping up much more central and kind of crossing over. And that was great. I mean, Martinelli at the moment is not really on great form, but he's such a nightmare to pick up if he's allowed to move around. Yeah, pretty much. I think particularly if you've got Havertz up front, you're just kind of relying on a lot of movement. And that, I think, he is not coincidental that he scored in that context, because he's very good at finding space when the defense is being moved around. I think against a settled defense, it's much harder for him. Much harder for anyone, but Havertz is particularly good at just kind of arriving in the box at the right time. And yeah, I'd like to see a lot more of it. I've been thinking about Saka as well. Like, Saka's really, the last, since the start of the year, he's just been an absolute killer, which is great. That's always what I wanted him to be, is essentially a striker. I don't really care where his kind of starting position is, but I think he's always had amazing ability to finish in really surprising ways that other players find really difficult to pick up. And there was a couple of moments. One was the goal, and then there was another one where you just skip three or four defenders. And
you were ghost. You would have been.
Yeah.
I stood up. And
he just reminds me of Salah in those situations. Obviously, he doesn't have Salah's top speed.
Yeah.
But he can find space in other ways, and the way that he manipulates the ball in the box and gets shots is just brilliant. So I think the other thing, I think it is linked a little bit to kind of other areas of the team. So there's times when we kind of rely on Saka to start quite deep with the ball and get the ball up the pitch. Mm-hmm. And it's harder for him then to make the difference in the penalty box.
Yeah.
And I think if we can move that elsewhere in the team, like, I don't want to get into like a whole Zinchenko conversation necessarily, but I think our run of form at the moment and the way that some of the players are playing is not coincidental that we're finding other solutions to kind of controlling the midfield that doesn't involve Zinchenko.
Yeah,
Zinchenko can be fine in some games, but I think the balance somehow across the team has been a bit better since he's been out of the team.
I'm all for it. I can't lie. I like my defenders to be able to defend. You know, first of all, so.
I was going to say, like, when you think about the term midfield maestro, I mean, that's literally what Georgie was today. I think that's what Georgie is every time he plays for us. And I put a lot of like weight on Odegaard because I don't say he's our midfield maestro because he doesn't like do the same thing that Jorginho does, but he is always the one making the pass. He's always the one in the final third trying to make the final ball, most through balls in the calendar year, I think, since we started. And I like, if you can alleviate some of that Odegaard stuff and put some of that on another player in the midfield, because you're not going to get that from Kai. He's more movement. That's his best quality, in my opinion. You're getting that a lot from Georgie, and you saw it in the game today, for sure.
I love that you call him Georgie. It's so cute.
Yeah. I don't know. I just like calling him Georgie.
Somehow, because even though Georgino means like little George, it's like you just call him Georgie.
Little George.
Coach, I want to ask you about this. By the same token, we're going to give Georgino a lot of praise throughout this pod.
Yeah.
But you know who, like, it's been established for a while that Gabriel Magalhães, who scored the first goal essentially to us, his passing has improved leaps and bounds. But today was something different. Like, I thought, it felt like I was watching two Jorginhos at times, or am I overstating this?
Okay, so I've got a mini theory I'd like to put to you guys. And I think at this point, because the burden was so much more on Saliba last season and early parts of this season to be like our build-up guy, and obviously Gabriel wants to improve and he's been improving. I feel like he's improved so much so that he's at worst as good as Saliba now, passing up from the back. He just hasn't got the nimble feet that Saliba does, but the actual pass appreciation, like the choice of pass and, you know, the weight of it, I think is fantastic. He's picking up like some of the angles, especially like from where I was sitting second. Some of the angles I could see them, but I didn't think he would play them, and he did, and it was the right pace almost every single time. And I don't think people that play football understand sometimes receiving a pass isn't about if the player sees it or not, but you know, if your body is ready to receive it. And he seems to be doing it in a way that allows for Georgina to turn straight away, for Odegaard to turn straight away, you know, for them to turn out of pressure straight away. It's not into feet. It's like, oh shit, I've got to give it straight back to you. He's actually thinking about these things when he's delivering those passes. I think he's improved so much that it doesn't really matter where our build up comes from either of our centre backs. Like, it's stupendous.
I think
I'm so glad he's getting his flowers.
Yeah.
I don't want to be too mean to Zinchenko, but I do think if you're Gabriel, like how you assess your passing options is really different. If Zinchenko's like standing like 5 meters ahead of you, slightly to your left, screaming at you to give you the ball, the ball every single time you get the ball, you just play that simple pass and then he takes it over. Whereas, yeah, it looks like we've been underutilizing what Gabriel can do with the ball.
Yeah, for sure.
Gabby, before we move on from Gabby, do you want to get in on that? Because I know that's your boy.
That's my boy. The only thing I will say is that I can't state enough how good he's been. Like, I genuinely cannot state enough how he's, in my opinion, he's our player of the season. And it's not close. He's been our player of the season. And I've said that a couple weeks ago, but I'm saying it again now. And by the end of the season, I'll say it then too.
I've had the thought actually. So
I know we don't like we won't talk about Porto, but like he was the only player during that Porto game that could hold his head high and said he played, you know, pretty well. In my opinion, that's what I think. And I think he's played well basically every single game this season. Like, I just don't think he's put a foot wrong. I think he's gone up a gear. He didn't look rattled like at all. And I think we all knew, and I know we all say that the stadium was rocking, like the boys were buzzing, they were ready to get their revenge. But like, we all knew that we should have not lost that game at St. James Park. Like, let's be real. No. So I think they already knew what was going to. They wanted to give them a battering, and it starts from the back. Like, he's so aggressive. He's so aggressive, and not in a fouling sense, just aggressive in his interceptions, getting the ball forward. He's calm at the back. He's like, all those mistakes that we saw when he first got here, you don't see that anymore. I just love watching him play. And I think he genuinely deserved the armband when Odegaard came off and he gave it to Georgie, and then Georgie came off and gave it to Gabriel. I was like, yeah, that's what I want to see.
Saturday, man. A perfect Saturday.
Yeah, he's like legitimately our Sergio Ramos. No joke. Like, when he's in the box for a corner, I'm like, oh, yeah, on his head top. Yeah. Like, let's go.
Yeah, so I don't want to bring the vibes down, but I can think of so many nearly moments in that first half where the half probably should have ended 6-0 if we're being efficient.
Yeah.
Elliot, you have a considered way of looking at these things. Is that a problem, even though we scored 4 goals?
I didn't really think so tonight. Because I think there was a point at which Newcastle just looked like they'd be humiliated. It was only 2-0, but they were like so lost.
Well, with Newcastle, it was Jason Tindall as well.
Yeah, especially Tindall and Harry looked really traumatized on the bench, which is fair enough. They're kind of, yeah, it was just it was nice to be kind of so dominant against them, because they spent a bunch of money. They bought, what, 2 good players? I guess you can throw Trippier in there. He's good, but he's old. Isak and Bruno. But then they just bought a lot of guys who just, I don't know, they're strong and they run fast, and a lot of them could kind of be playing at like any level of the professional game, and they're all just playing for Newcastle. And they get a lot of ref calls, and yeah, Newcastle are terrible to watch.
Yeah, and I love to see it. Bruno got dog walked today.
Oh, we're going to get to Bruno. Don't worry about that. Yeah.
You know what? We're here now. Let's talk about Bruno. Because I thought their best player was probably Karius, which is nice because, you know, narrative and all that. But Bruno could not get on the ball in that first half. Yeah. What you were at the stadium. Was there a feeling in addition to what we were seeing on the field? We're pretty intense around him.
Every time he got the ball, right? I just noticed that it was the rotational fouling that we are often victims of. He was the victim of it today, and it was glorious. And I noticed there was, because he was giving it the game started, he was giving it out initially. And I think the players kind of woke up and realized, hold on a second. This is the fucker that should have been sent off in the last game. All right. We remember now. So there was an expectation every time Bruno got the ball, someone was like, hit him, like, get into him, basically. And I counted maybe 3 forward passes from him in the first half, maybe. I don't know. There might have been more, but that's what I remember. He couldn't even affect the game at all. There was definitely a constrained effort, because he's obviously the best midfielder. He's the one that can actually make things happen kind of thing. So it wasn't even just we hate him. It was more of if we stop Bruno, then there's no way they're getting out of their half. So we're going to score, basically.
Yeah, Newcastle didn't have a shot for the entire half for the first time in 10 years. That's a crazy stat. Like,
they didn't have a touch in our penalty box that whole entire half.
Bruno also, like, you're talking about like the relationship between like the fans and the players and the manager, and like he definitely pissed off the players by his performance in the game earlier in the season, but he's also pissed off the fans by joining Newcastle instead of Arsenal. And there's no fan base that is gonna Arsenal that will ever forgive you for publicly choosing an inferior club like that.
And then it was the tweet, wasn't it, as well? With our badge on it as well. Then it grayed out to Newcastle.
When they announced it, did they do that?
It was him or his agent that done it, basically.
Yeah. It was very weird.
That's hilarious that you guys are so petty, because I don't remember any of that.
I didn't remember it until he said it, but it's manufactured beef.
Do you know who I actually blame for this shit? It's fucking Jason Tindall again, man. Honestly, he's so fucking... I cannot stand it. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So look, the first half ended, guys, and one of my mates texted me. Go on.
Before you leave the first half, Fabian Schär, him and Havertz got into a challenge.
Oh yeah,
I was kind of in the box. Was that a penalty, people? Or am I? Did I get gassed?
I haven't seen a replay. I don't know.
Havertz doesn't get calls. Yeah. He doesn't get calls.
Fair enough. Really, I guess it's too lanky, but it looked like a penalty.
I thought it was a foul.
Yeah, you can't go grabbing him.
Do you know what? Yeah, I actually remember now. And it started outside the box. And it was incredibly aggressive. I don't know why he was so aggressive. The Kai one.
Yeah.
I don't know why he was so aggressive with him. It's still actually kind of baffling me now, actually. But I don't know. I can't tell.
WWE, specialty move. I was like, RKO out of nowhere, just armbarred him down to the ground. I was like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
I like that Havertz like really appealed for it, which I liked, because sometimes he's just really passive in those situations. Havertz's personality seems to be like he's either really on it or he can still be a decent footballer, but he's quite passive. And at the moment, he's really on it. It's really fun to watch.
He's one of my four core groups who I always know is ready to fight. Like, it's Gabriel, Ben White, Master of the Dark Arts, Benny Blanco, and Kai Havertz and Declan Rice. They're always ready to fight, and I love that.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, you just brought up Declan Rice. I'll tell you how I knew essentially that we were not going to play any games today, because the lineup and obviously the midfield and the profiles is how I would love Arsenal to play most games, with your playmaker, your mobile box to box, and your metronome. Your metronome, basically.
4-4-2. You love 442.
I love a 442, but also love I'm partial to a 433 as well, basically. But I knew straight away, okay, Declan Rice is not playing next to Jorginho. The setup that we had against Liverpool is completely different to the setup that we had today against Newcastle. Declan Rice was taking the ball from deep and striding with it forward. He was also up there, actually making third man runs and actually just, I suppose, winning the ball high up, basically. And I knew that was just, okay, we're definitely going onto the front foot. But I want to know, I'm curious to know if anybody has a solution or anything like that. But do you think that's something that we could possibly, depending on the signing or alternative solution, do you think that's something we can actually utilize, like, on a game-to-game basis, where, like, sometimes Declan Rice just says, okay, I'm going to go number eight now? Because every time Declan Rice has started this season, it's either been straight, I'm number six today, or I'm number eight today. It hasn't been a hybrid sort of role, but I think there's scope for that, you know? Anyone? Well,
it depends on what we do in the market, essentially. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know who the candidates are. It seems like Zubimendi has been the best link, but I think with him, I don't know. Arteta knows, and Jorginho is not very mobile. Yeah. So if mobility is the issue with Zubimendi, then bring him, I suppose, because he looks pretty good to me. But if we get a player like that, then we can probably deploy that on a more regular basis. I mean, again, I think kind of ties into the question I asked Elliot earlier about whether that was sort of the plan for the season, having that sort of playmaker as the deeper midfielder. That, I suppose, because Jorginho starts high in some phases of play as well. Yeah. So it's
kind of really good. He's really good at intercepting, though. That's what people forget. He's really good at reading plays and reading, like, passing lanes where he can actually intercept high up the pitch as well. He's actually quite good at that. And I think in some phases it makes sense, because if he's the one doing that and it gets past him, well, unfortunately, there's Declan Rice there for the other team. So it actually does make sense.
I was going to say, I think that's like Mikel constantly wanting fluidity. Like he's constantly asking his players to, I mean, Ben White said it. He constantly wants his players to do a million things. Like he's like, I want you to do this and this and this. Like you're just not just a six. You're going to be a million other things too.
We get to talk a little bit more about Kai, because I like talking about Kai Havertz. That chance he missed at the end of the second half. I know it's going to get brought up as, oh, this is why he's not a... well, put it this way. I think he's a midfielder.
Agreed.
Not that it matters what he is. It doesn't matter, but I think he's a midfielder because he's capable of a finish like that. Mm. Elliot, do you feel differently?
Kind of. Yeah, I think he's a forward. I think a lot of the best strikers I've ever seen, like, miss chances really in a really stupid way. Mm. Like, if you ever watch, like, a compilation of, like,
Haaland
greatest chances that Thierry Henry ever missed, like, when Henry was at the club and we were playing well, we would score like three goals, but there would be like 30 missed chances where you were like, how the hell are we not, like, literally 10-0 up at halftime? Like, that was a common occurrence, and that this was kind of like, this kind of had that energy. Like, I think it's good when the team is playing as though they're going to have a lot of chances, and they are going to have a lot of chances. So it's not really like the end of the world when you miss one.
Fair enough. He's like a upgraded Marwan Shamak or some shit.
Yeah, he's 9.5, I guess. That's
the vibe I'm getting with some of these gangly moments. Like, very Marwan Shamak, you know, just needs a hair gel in there. Coach, the third goal, Havertz interception, pass to Saka, and I used to really rate Tino Livramento, but something happened in that stadium.
I thought it was,
he got cooked.
I thought it was really disrespectful that they put him up against Saka.
Oh yeah,
why?
How old is Livramento? Livramento's like a child.
Yeah,
Saka's like the best player in the league. What are you thinking?
But I know, but okay. So I know why they put him up against Saka, and it goes all the way back to, you know, I've been watching football a long time, but not as long as some other people. So someone else might have done it before. But the first time in my life I saw it, it goes back to what Rafa Benitez done with Arbeloa and Messi, where you put a right-footed fullback at left-back, because Saka's left foot is so deadly and Livramento is really, really fast. Obviously, if he comes in on your left foot, you're tackling on your dominant foot. It makes sense. Unfortunately for Livramento, Saka is so good at football that no matter how quick you are and mobile you are, there's nothing you can really do about it. So yeah, it was disrespectful in that regard, because, you know, it's Saka, but the actual thought process behind it, you know, I respect it completely. But guys, it's Bukayo Saka, man. I don't know what else to say about him at this point. He's so okay. So the best way I can kind of quantify how good he is that we don't even talk about Alexis Sanchez anymore. Like, we just don't.
Well, I never did.
Yeah. I mean,
long time listeners know how much I can't stand the dude. But there was a guy I was talking to today. I'm just like, look, if we're ranking Arsenal number sevens, Saka's probably in the last 30 years, Saka's goes straight into the top three. straight away. So top two potentially even now at this point. So yeah.
Honestly, I think I said it on the
podcast. He's actually top two. Now.
Yeah, so it's Perez and it's him, right?
Yeah. I think I said on the pod last week, but he's definitely becoming Mr. Inevitable for us. Yeah. Like I said, being our Salah or our KDB or something, because you just feel it. Like, you just know he's gonna score or assist. He's coming away with some GA.
he's always leaving with something. And do you know what? His goal was the most. Saka's got to the point where he's so good now, where that type of goal is like, another type of Saka, type of Bukayo Saka goal, because he scores out of nothing so regularly now. Like, he picked the ball up, like, on the touchline outside the box. You know,
hey listen, Havertz still gets his assist.
He still
got period. Listen, I said I'm leaving here with more than something.
Still gets his assist from 2011 as well. And Messi ran past six players. It's fine. You get it. That's great. It's great. But those types of goals, right, are reserved for the very, very special players. Call it world class, call it whatever you want. But there aren't many players in the league that can pick up the ball there and actually turn it into a goal. That's just the bottom line. That's why you pay all the money for them. That's why they get this. That's why they get that. That's why, you know, in basketball, you call it superstar calls. Saka now is getting it now because the respect is there. Teams are preparing for him, you know. In the first half especially, every time he got the ball, guys, I'm sure you noticed, there were three players around him again. Saka is just, he's the best. I'm sorry, he's the fucking best.
Simply the best.
Oh, I'm so proud of you guys for being so proud of him. It's like the reverse Jorginho thing, you know, like my pride got bigger. Did Martinelli make up for his, I'm not blaming him for the Porto thing at all.
Yeah.
They were all kind of shit, but he's kind of shit in a special way, you know, in that it's like, bro, you know, you'd be making these kind of mistakes when you just carry the ball in midfield and take these fucking joyrides and just boot it to the wrong fucking team. Did he make up for that today, Elliot?
I had a slightly different view of the Porto thing. I didn't really think that goal was his fault. I thought it was like a legit pass to play. He slightly underhit it, but then it was a bit of a wonder goal for them to score
a bit.
Yeah, I don't think he's he's just not really in his best form. I think there's like a bit of a question there, kind of longer term. Is he just in a wee dip? Does he need a bit more competition? Like, I think certainly if you were thinking about forwards to recruit in the summer, I think you basically want Martinelli to be like a bit like what Jota is for Liverpool. So he doesn't have to play every game, but he's a fantastic player to have if you need him. And he could, he's pretty versatile as well. But yeah, Arteta loves him, doesn't he? Because it's like Trossard that comes in and out, and Martinelli plays every game.
Yeah.
And that's also pretty worth kind of commenting on. It's just he's really durable now. I don't want to jinx him, but him and Saka are so consistent in terms of their minutes, and even, you know, Martinelli, just like the nature of his game, even when he's not right on top, he's still a huge problem for the opposition
because of the speed. And this is why we should be looking at buying another winger that's at least as quick as him. Like, football is such a simple sport where if you have an incredibly fast and dynamic player in your team, at least one in your team, in your starting 11 kind of thing, things can change in the blink of an eye. You have two in your starting 11 now, and you know, you look at the great teams over the years that have had players like that on both wings, and they've won it all most years. So I think, I'm not going to mention any names because this is obviously, we're still in the middle of the season, but Martinelli's value to the team, I think, is only shown when he's not playing. people take for granted at times. I think he's not scoring a lot. He got 15 non-penalty goals last season, but you look at how we play when he's not playing, kind of thing. The quickest forward in our front line when he's not playing is Saka. Now, Saka is quick, but Martinelli is quite literally a racehorse. So it's there's levels to it. So yeah, look, I'm not mad at his form really, because I know that just the sheer thought of him to opposition teams is enough. More, you know. So yeah, I'm happy with what he's producing right now. I want him to do more in terms of output, but he's working for the team. That's what we can ask.
Well, follow up question to anyone that wants it. There was a point in time, I can't remember the exact time, not that long ago, where we kind of thought he and Saka were on the same trajectory. Mm. Now it kind of feels pretty clear that Saka has pulled ahead.
Saka's always the better player, though. We knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is true. Say, but
I think it's only because, well, I'll speak for myself. I think it's only because I think that Martinelli's football IQ is not as high as Saka's. It's just not. And I also think that we're a little harsh on Martinelli, at which I have been this season, because I just don't think he's been playing up to the level he should be. But I think we'd be thinking differently if people just finished off his assists sometimes. Like, he should have way more assists than he has this season. It's actually crazy. But yeah, I just think his football IQ sometimes is just lower. I mean, he has all the, if you want to say all the minerals, he's got all the minerals to do what he needs to do, but he also does a lot of things like runs with his head down. Like, his crossing could be better. He makes his decision making sometimes in the final third is just like questionable sometimes. I think he could be better at that. I think Saka's level is very, very high. So, like, for him to be like, oh, he's not Saka, I mean, nobody's Saka. So, there's that.
That's fair.
Before we do leave Martinelli, though, I just want Nico to remember his run at the end of last season is essentially why we was down to week 35 or 36, basically. I mean, he scored or assisted pretty much in almost every game. In that 10-game run, he pretty much scored or assisted in all of those games. And I'm going to stick my neck out and say I feel like he's saving those goals again, because he's the man for the big moments, Martin. He really is. Like, he's been, we now fortunately have quite a few big game players, but I feel like he is, you know, he is essentially the big game player. You know, he's the winner against City, you know, the go-ahead goal against Liverpool. These are all things that come from the fact that he's attributes. He's super fast. He's super decisive. He's our best finisher as well. Not best ball striker. That's still obviously Trossard, but in terms of finishing, I still trust Martinelli in front of goal.
Yeah, none of the forwards are great ball strikers. It's quite a weird feature of this team. Yes. But I think sometimes it works in their favour because they kind of scuff it in.
They're more hinky-jinky people than anything else.
So I got one more Martinelli. I can't help myself. Yeah. So what do we make of the argument that his form has to do with the fact that the eight next to him most times?
I was going
to
say,
it's a thing people are talking about. I know we're too smart to believe that shit, but what do we make of this argument, please?
Sir, I've been fighting for my life about this for months. Okay, like, stop the nonsense. Anybody who says that, you don't know ball. I'm not going to argue with you. You just don't know ball. I don't know what to tell you. Martinelli just hasn't been playing up to the potential that he should. Let's start with just 2024. The way that we started 2024 has been exceptional, genuinely. We just look very good as a team. However, does Martinelli look different in 2023 than he did in 2024? Yes. His movement is different. In my opinion, his movement is different. He's making better decisions in 2024, and he, rightfully so, should have more assists. His decision-making in 2023 was not as good. And I'm not talking about last season. I'm talking about this season. His decision-making has not been as good, and he hasn't been moving as much. He just hasn't been. And that has nothing to do with what another player is doing. I don't know what to tell you.
I feel threatened.
I don't know what to tell you.
Good Lord. All right. Let's do some subs. Trossard, you mentioned him, the best ball striker at the club. He came on, and I don't remember anything he did. This is not a criticism. I just don't remember a hope. I think I was just happy at this point. What did he do, coach?
He overheard a few passes.
He also toyed with the, I forget who, one of their fucking right backs. I don't know. Like,
Oh, he nutmegged somebody.
Yeah, he told us them a little bit. I don't even know who half these players are. Where did they find them? Honestly, man, the bunch of wankers, man. I don't think he done much wrong. But he just, I've noticed when we're bringing these types of players on. Or I was talking to my mate on the way back, and we were just like, these players are getting minutes, but they're not really affecting their game. It's like, well, yeah, we're winning 4-5, 6-0 by the time they come on. Like, if they're going to run their socks off, that's great. That's all they need to do, see the game out kind of thing. So I think it's a bit unfair to judge them on that. I've seen better games when, you know, maybe it's a 1 or 2 goal lead, or maybe we're even drawing kind of thing, maybe even chasing the game. Then these players come on and it looks a little bit different. Nelson normally looks quite good when we're trying to get another goal kind of thing. You know, Trossard can as well kind of thing. So I feel like game state plays a huge part on, you know, on how these players sort of come on and, you know, what their energy is like and whatnot, you know. But yeah, ESR, if you want to have a talk about ESR, I think that's a lot more interesting. I was very impressed with the fact that he managed to get 3 chances in about 10 minutes for himself. But he was running his socks off as well. I'm pretty sure Gabby and everyone's noticed that he was fat at one point. Let's be honest, he was fat. And he's come back fit now. And I think Arteta is such a disciplinarian that he would not be given ESR minutes if he didn't think he was, you know, the right weight, but also if he didn't think he was training well as well. What do you guys think?
Yes, sir. I love to say he glides with the ball, because he does. But one thing about ESR, he's a real shooter. He gonna shoot the ball every time.
Yeah.
And it's honestly so unfortunate that fucking Dan Byrne had to clear that off the line. Like,
Dan Byrne, that whole cunt.
Fucking Dan Byrne, man. He definitely deserved a goal for sure.
Yeah, he did. He did assist her goal, which I don't feel like we should talk about because Joe Willock scored it. He's ours anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, Reese. like, I know we're not relying on Reese Nelson to determine the fate of our season, but I'm sorry. That was unacceptable. I didn't like that. That doesn't happen when Bukayo is out there. So I had to point that out because I'm a curmudgeon that way.
I like the fact that he took all the forwards off, including Odegaard.
Yeah.
He hasn't really been doing that. For the whole time he's been manager, like
he's learning.
Resting the best players when we've already won, and Saka's getting a rest these days, which is really nice.
Arteta wasn't doing that before because I just don't think he trusts the players he had on the bench before. Like, he was like,
to trust them when you're 4-0 up anyway.
Yeah, like,
that's true.
They're not going to fuck up that much.
But what about Demetrius?
Like, we don't have a game midweek, do we? We've got like 9 days or something till the next one. And then we're playing, I think between now and the Porto game, we only have 1 game a week. But he's kind of, I think Arteta's managing the minutes a lot better this season than he did last season. Partly because he's able to, because we have a little bit less, with no Europa League, there's slightly less games out of the cups. But I think somewhere in his little high performance folder, he's noted down that he needs to give these players rest as when he can.
That's not just looking like Liverpool right now.
Liverpool are a cautionary tale for everybody. But you know, just on that, actually, that's a good point. Do you think Arsenal's performance today? I think our defense was great, but the fact that we were able to defend the way we could was because of our forwards. I think they put in such a shift that they were just gassed. They were generally just gassed. Like, from minute one, you know, like I said, they won a corner in the first 15 seconds. I think they were sprinting so much. I'd love to see how many sprints they all completed, because I think it might be one of the highest for the season.
Like, listen, man, Martin Odegaard is on performance enhancing drugs.
Okay, for sure.
Don't take our shit like he took Juventus' shit, because this dude is out of control with that shit, man. Like, I can't understand how someone that, like, that's what, I don't know if I'll ever love him as much as I love Mesut Ozil, because I just love the, I don't know what's the word here, insouciance of whatever, of, well, you know, just the vibes, if you will.
Yeah.
But to see an ostensibly creative player run this much, it's really something. Like, I can't really think of a, I mean, I'm not going to say
Ozil actually ran loads.
Who did?
Ozil ran so much. Go look at his data. It's just that everybody refused to acknowledge.
Exactly. Yeah, they didn't press together.
I don't know why.
They're pressing together. Him and Kai are just running at people, just running,
But the pressing, though, like the fact that he leads the press, it's just so, for a creative player, it's really impressive, you know, like, which is crazy because Bruno runs a lot too.
Oh, but he's dog shit, man.
Right, and I wouldn't want him anywhere near my team. And it's just such I love it. I just love him. I love him.
Are we going to give a shout out to the one guy that we couldn't deal with? Joe Willock.
Okay, fine. All right. So Joe Willock, right? Ironically, his profile would be great at Arsenal, but his profile is just a handful of more quality. But his goal is a typical Joe Willock goal, and a typical goal of a midfielder who understands space.
Isn't he just Kai Havertz but black and
No. I feel like there's tangible. There's more than enough.
Just tangible. Set him up now.
Yeah. He just described Kai Havertz. That's what I heard.
Is he McTominay but black?
No.
What are we doing here?
Let's disrespect him a little bit. McTominay
but black is terrible.
You know what?
That's Amadou Onana. That's how I feel about that.
Yeah. Amadou Onana is McTominay but black. That's you.
I like Onana. I think Onana's
good. I don't know why any Arsenal fan would like Onana. I don't get it. Like, it just feels wrong to me. I'm like, that's not an Arsenal player. I don't care. Like, he's a wrestler. That's, you know, people are in love with the tools. You look at him and you're like,
pace and power. Yeah. That's what they want.
Patrick. Yeah. Nah.
Oh, no. Patrick is infinitely. Okay. You know, let's not go too far back, but Patrick was so infinitely gifted with the ball that he looked like he was created in the lab some games. Like, he was playing against guys that were older than him and he looked like he was their dads. That's how far ahead he was. So yeah, but with Joe Willock, right? Joe Willock, I have to be honest, even though he spent a lot of time like injured, there's been tangible improvements to his game, stuff that I absolutely hated when he was at Arsenal. Like, his first touch was bad when he was at Arsenal. His passing was bad. His ball carrying was decent. It wasn't good. But now you can actually see there's been a tangible improvement. And his understanding of space has actually gotten better. Newcastle's form with him being fit now will actually take an upturn, I think, because he's a different profile to Joe Linton, who is just a wrestler, a thug, or whatever else, you know, a bandit, just a nasty guy. But yeah, the goal itself is what it is. It happened, but it's, you know, having a midfielder that can do that for you, I think is completely like invaluable, and they can still do all the off the ball stuff as well.
I feel like a jackass because I just skipped past Kivior's goal.
I was gonna say, are we gonna get to my boy or what?
Well, then take it away. You get to talk about the accountants.
Listen, if you were tuned in last week, you know what I said about Kivior. Yeah. Whoever, to all of you who are telling me that Kivior is shit, fuck you again for the second time. Because I was fighting
Jason Tindall. It was Jason Tindall.
I was fighting in the trenches for this boy. That guy is so class. He's so class. And he's shown his, like, what? He has a 3 GA in the last 5 games or something like that.
Wow.
Listen.
More than Marcus Rashford.
Listen, okay? I'll take it. Okay, I'm not thinking about Zinchenko. That's all I have to say. I can't wait till Tommy comes back. But that's a different story. Right. I'm not thinking about Zinchenko. All right? Well, I love it.
What's your evaluation at it of Kivior versus Tomiyasu at this stage?
Tomiyasu is just a better 1v1 defender. Sometimes Kivior, like, he gets tight and they just, like, kind of blow past him a little bit, and, like, he fouls. He has to foul. It is what it is. I'll take the tactical foul, all right? But Tommy's just sensational when it comes to 1v1. I think he's our best. Actually, I know he's our best 1v1 defender. That's it.
Do you know, can someone refresh my memory? I don't know if you remember, Elliot, but somebody in our squad said that Tomiyasu is the best 1v1. I know exactly
what you're talking about. I think was it
Martinelli or was it Saka? One of them said it.
Well, here's the thing about him.
I think it was Trossard that might have said it.
I think I've disrespected him a little bit because I personally think Tomiyasu is the best 1v1 defender in the world. It's between him and Wan-Bissaka, personally. I watch a lot of football from a lot of leagues. I watch a lot of fullbacks defend. And those two are the best 1v1 defenders.
Oh, yeah.
I might be wrong, but those are my picks, you know.
Listen, if you can lock down Salah, I have no arguments. Love that guy. But Kivior getting that set piece goal, and then I'm glad they give it to him too, because they love to take away Gabriel's set goals, but that's not the point. I was like, yeah, I love that for you. You deserve that. Good performance, my friend.
Man, I don't know. What else do we need to cover, folks? I feel like we pretty much nailed it. I mean, we could do some more fuck Jason Tindalls.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, fuck him, man. He's just a clown. I think in the first minute, he took the ball. No, for the first half, sorry, where the ball's gone out for a throw-in kind of thing, and he's thrown it back to the player that was on the pitch rather than to the player that was going to take the throw-in. I was like, yeah, like, I really hope you step on like 50 plugs on your way back up to that ship or that Newcastle. You know.
Like, did you notice that Newcastle were like pretty early on? They weren't even bothering to time waste properly. They were just half-assing their time wasting. Yeah. Like you could see that they had instructions at different points to just like Trippier does a thing where he just sits down.
Right.
Like Arsenal have like a number of phases. When a throw in, Trippier just sits down.
Yeah,
but his heart wasn't in it because he knew that it was just going to keep happening. They like Bruno Guimarães like goes down, takes off his shoe, shouts at someone. But like usually with Newcastle, that takes like 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But in this game, they knew they were just so done after.
That's what Eddie Howe said. You know, after his post match, he was like, "We in the first half, we just weren't ourselves." I said, "Because you weren't fouling over and over again." I don't know what to tell you.
Well,
because this game was not going to be like the game at St. James Park. I don't know what you expected, but it was not going to be that.
I actually have another theory, and I think the Porto coach watched that game and watched how they essentially broke up our rhythm, and they turned up to the max, knowing that it's Champions League, knowing that if you walk past the player, they're going to go down and they're going to get the foul. We looked so confused on set pieces in Portugal because the physicality, it was just like, yeah, this is fine. This is what we do every week. You know what I mean? And then automatically in Champions League, you stand next to the goalkeeper and the ball's in the air and they call the foul straight away just to stand next to the goalkeeper. And I think that really rattled us. And I think Newcastle looked at that and thought, okay, cool, we're going to try the same thing again. Unfortunately, we have Bukayo Saka, guys. I'm sorry.
I think this might end up being a bit of a preview for the Porto second leg. I certainly hope so. But
yeah,
I think they are quite similar teams. Obviously, like Pepe is like the emeritus professor of shithousery.
Yeah.
So, like, even Ben White is like, hello, how are you?
No, that might be good for us actually. Ben White might have picked up a few things after this. You know, he might be to add to his Arsenal. So, yeah.
Did you hear Sergio Conceição's like comments after the game? He was really giving it to Arteta.
It feels personal. You know, it feels personal. And I feel like a lot of it, I feel like it's jealousy as well. That's what it comes down to, because you know, mentioning stuff like, oh yeah, he's a child of Pep and stuff like that. It's like, is that really necessary? Oh yeah, they came to play, we came to win. It's like you're almost hooking up the Mourinho playbook. You know, you're going.
It's Mourinho playbook right there.
Yeah, you're going a bit too far here, but you know, it's fine. People love this shit, clearly. But when you get turned over,
well, so does it scare you guys that Porto hasn't conceded from a single set piece this season?
No, not really. We have a Gabriel, guys.
I'm ready for us to be the first. Like.
All right, because that's what we might need to break them down. Because that mid block is going to be nasty, guys. It's going
to
be nasty.
You guys should have like a, you know, I don't know if you still do this, but the wee section at the beginning where you talk about the refs, you could just have like a standing section that's about like what the fuck were we actually doing on corners, attacking corners. I mean, because it's always different. Like every time they like cut to that little guy or free kicks coach and he's like screaming away looking really happy, and then you see some of the there was one corner where I think it was Saliba was standing like basically outside the box right next to the touchline, and then just runs it. They just do like such insane angles. I've never seen anything like it. It's always different. It's if you're the opposing coach, it must be so infuriating, because you watch all the tape of Arsenal the last 10 games and then you just do something completely different.
We're rolling the dice. I think we're just rolling the dice. Oh, let's try this. It'll be like, it's almost like a this will be really funny. Let's try this. Let's see how it goes kind of thing. And it just goes like that. Yeah.
But that was a source of annoyance in the Porto game, though. I felt like we did the same thing too often.
Yes, that was the problem. Yeah. We did the same play every time. We didn't switch it up, which we never do, which is very weird. I will say, I know we're getting to be set piece FC, but I would love to see us do more set pieces like the free kick nonsense. Mm-hmm. Like specifically, I'm thinking about the Netherlands in the last World Cup where they just like kicked it to that player in the box.
Yeah.
That was a great goal. I can't lie. I would love to see some nonsense like that.
Yeah, in the absence of a guy that can ping them in on a regular basis, why the fuck not? You know,
That is like a hell of a... Imagine if it was your job to just come up with some like random stuff you can try. I think
I'd be really good at it because...
So much fun.
Thinking of ridiculous things to try, I'm pretty good at that. I did notice. I know we all spoke about this phenom of Declan Rice taking corners for us, right? And, you know, football, there's nothing new under the sun. It's been done millions of times before. It's been done at Arsenal before, guys, and I feel like we've forgotten, right? Emmanuel Petit, who is the exact same height as Declan Rice, used to be our regular corner taker. And he also was our DM as well. I keep saying this, but Arteta truly is a traditionalist. I genuinely do. He's so much more... a traditionalist then found that Ten Hag says, I want to be the best transition team in the world, but does everything to be not that. Arteta has looked at the tapes clearly. You know, he's got big, strong guys through the center of the pitch, like Arsenal of old used to. He's got all your technical, like, wizards and whatnot, like, combining, you know, coming in from stuff like that, like Arsenal of old as well. And he's got DMs taking corners now. Like, he
just... Fair, Ten Hag, he's got step one in becoming the world's best transition team is... complete, because the midfield is completely unable to retain possession. Is all of the other elements of that plan are yet to come together.
And then no matter what happens in the game, just talk about Arsenal. Just
Do you talk about us today, actually? I need to know. Did you actually talk about us today?
I don't even know. I didn't even check.
It's not even just Arsenal. It's the penalty decision that wasn't a penalty. You always...
Oh my God. Like, let it go.
The thing where Gabby just like pushed Hoyland very slightly.
Just get in the waiting room, man. That's what you need to do.
Did you get, just before we finish, did you guys watch the United game?
I did.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
I did.
This is every week, though.
Yeah.
Like, even when they win, this is how they look. They're so open.
But like, Fulham didn't even... Paulinho's suspended. So they had, like, I don't even know who they had in midfield.
It was Lukic. And
you should have got the red card on Maguire because that was a terrible tackle. Yeah. Like,
probably, but it was Old Trafford. It's fine.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I say this in the most non-disrespectful way, but watching United and then watching Arsenal straight after, you can actually see what it means to be a standard Premier League team and to be a title challenger Premier League team. It actually feels that it's not even worlds apart, it's galaxies apart, because basic structure off the ball, right, United don't have. Every single one of my Fulham's midfielders today at least once carried the ball 30, 40 yards through midfield. That shouldn't happen ever in any case at Old Trafford. With Arsenal, I mean, good luck. Good luck trying to carry the ball 10 yards. You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, we're lucky. We got Pep's cone man. Like, who knows where we would have ended up without him. Folks, I feel pretty satisfied that we fucked Jason Tindall enough. So unless anyone else has anything, it might be time to say peace. What y'all got?
I just want to say thanks to Alex Awobi, 97th minute. Son of Arsenal.
Son of Arsene Wenger. I know that's right.
That's a good place to end it.
He's done it again.
Yes. All right, folks. Other people, peace.
Peace.
Fuck Jason Tindall.
That's not very peaceful, bro.
I take my shirt off. Work all day. Hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. That's it.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll be inviting everyone over. From barbecues to girls' night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy, the way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.